Welcome to the Conceive Baby podcast. My name's Tasha Jennings, fertility naturopath and nutritionist. In each episode, I share with you my best fertility tips and introduce you to world-leading fertility experts to help you improve your fertility well-being to create your healthy pregnancy. Welcome to today's episode of the Conceive Baby podcast. I'm fertility naturopath and nutritionist Tasha Jennings, and today I'm speaking with a fabulous colleague who is someone I have looked up to for a long time. Whenever she is speaking at an event, I am there because she always has so much valuable wisdom to share. So I'm thrilled to have her speaking with us today. And that's Leah Hechtman. Leah is a naturopathic clinician, researcher, author, and educator who specializes in fertility, pregnancy, and reproductive health for men and for women. She has completed extensive training, advanced training, and is a university lecturer, keynote speaker, author, and educator to her peers. She is also a regular media spokesperson for her profession. And today I'm going to be talking with Leah about NAD+ and its role in fertility. Now, if you haven't heard of NAD+, listen on. And if you have heard of NAD+, keep listening too, as we'll be going beyond the hype to discuss exactly what NAD+ is, its role in reproductive health, as well as the array of supplement options that you will find on the market and how to know what's going to be of most benefit to you. So welcome, Leah.
Thanks for having me. Lovely to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you taking time out of what I know is a very busy schedule. So first of all, tell us a little bit about you and how you came to specialize in fertility and pregnancy. I know we've all got a story when it comes to this area.
Yeah, no, we all do. We all do. I remember when I graduated, I was a ripe old age of 20, and everyone had told me, because I was so young, that I would specialize in pediatrics. And so, of course, my first pediatric patient comes in with the parents, and the child is really dysregulated and the parents are clearly struggling, and I'm a parent, I get it, you know, no judgment. But I remember sitting there going, there's got to be a way to help earlier. There's got to be a way that we can support people and help them both with the health of their subsequent children, but also in the dynamic and the enjoyment of parenting and family creation. So that's where it started. And I was like, right, I want to go earlier. So started with practice, and you know what you put out to the universe brings. And so, of course, started getting a lot more fertility patients and starting to help them on their journey, and, of course, realised that I know nothing. So then started studying a master's, and then started a PhD. And, you know, like, I've been heavily connected to the fertility community, both in the naturopathic world as well as, you know, conventional medicine, you know, for over 20 years now. And it's absolutely my passion. You know, I thought I was just doing it just to help the next generation, which I hope I can contribute in some way to do. But I find it absolutely fascinating because there's so much to learn. There's so much to discover. It's constantly changing and evolving, and our understanding is just growing day by day. So I find it incredibly rewarding because you change people's lives, you know, in such a profound way. The creation of life is, you know, second to none. We're both mothers. We get it. You know, it's the most exhilarating, empowering, enriching experience of our lives, and to be able to contribute in some way, even just a small way, you know, and to help people be healthier before they create generations of children, and to help children have the best start in life. I mean, what more could you want to do?
I'm hearing you there.
I know you get it.
Yeah, it is such a wonderful thing to be able to help people on this journey. And I love the research that you do into this area. And that's why, as I said up front, I always attend anything you're speaking at. I know you just have such a wealth of information to share. You've just finished a PhD. So Today, we'll obviously be talking about NAD+. It is a relatively new player on the market, but I guess it looks at the mitochondria and mitochondrial energy. So let's start there. For, you know, get back to basics. What is the mitochondria? What role does it play in fertility? If anyone's heard me speak, I bang on about mitochondria and energy all the time, but let's delve into that a bit more.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, let's sort of lay the scene. So, you know, we're talking about fertility. We're talking about sperm and eggs or sperm and oocytes. And so we're talking about these tiny cells within the body. In men, they're generated on a daily basis. In women, we're born with them. So the health of our maternal grandmother influences the quality of our eggs or oocytes more than anything else than we'll ever do. But within those two cells, you know, they actually contain more mitochondria than any other cell in the body, particularly the oocyte. It contains more of this fundamental thing, this mitochondria, which is essentially the powerhouse or the energy generator within each cell. And, you know, even if you remember your year 10 biology and we talked about that really cool little sausage shaped thing within a cell, that's the mitochondria. And every single cell of your body will have it. But it's the idea of within those two gametes, the egg and the sperm, we have more of that mitochondria within those two types of cells because those two types of cells are so profound and the generation of the next life stems from it. So we know that if we can generate more energy within a cell, if we can have healthier generation of energy within a cell, we can help to stabilize and support the DNA within the cell as well. So the health of the mitochondria then dictates the health of the DNA and the health of the splitting of the DNA within the egg and the sperm. So the egg and the sperm each have the chromosomes that they do, and then they choose one of the chromosomes to then go and match to marry to generate the next generation. You know, 50% of mum's chromosomes, 50% of dad's chromosomes, then go and create 100% of our child's chromosomes. And it's the mitochondria within the cell that determines the health of the split and the selection of the split that determines who that child's going to be. So if I can influence the health of the mitochondria, I can influence the DNA, the genetic material that is going to create and determine who my child will actually be. I mean, there's nothing more powerful than that with current science. I mean, we both know, let's say you and I are still able to connect, if we chat in 10 years, there'll be something else that is even more specific than the mitochondria. Yep. But right now, this is what we know. And so if we can influence that, and we can, you know, with lifestyle choices, with supplemental choices, with pharmaceutical choices, then we can literally determine the DNA of the children and then what's going to happen from there. And, you know, you and I both work in this space and people are having kids at an older age for 101 reasons. So the health of that DNA starts to get less and less savvy, and the health and optimization of the mitochondria get less and less savvy, and the mitochondrial number declines. So we know that unless we're having kids in our early 20s, we have to be acknowledging this area. And even in our early 20s, we have to acknowledge it. So lots we can do, which is amazing.
And I love that there is lots we can do, because I find that whole process absolutely fascinating. The fact that, you know, two different cells can come together and create a new life to start a new heart beating is really phenomenal. Yeah. But as you can imagine, that takes a ton of energy and a ton of insight that these mitochondria can provide. So helping to support those is, you know, something that we can do for our reproductive health and also for our general health, I have to say as well. Yeah. This is great for our general health and aging and all of those things. So let's talk broadly about supporting mitochondrial health, about, you know, what's involved in, what can we do to support mitochondrial health in general? And then we'll talk about the new kid on the block.
Okay. So from a general perspective, anything that's going to influence your mitochondrial health is anything that potentially could influence your DNA. So thinking all the lifestyle stuff. So all the plastics and the chemicals and all that sort of stuff. We have to recognize and acknowledge we have enough data to know that exposure to various substances will have a negative effect on mitochondrial health. If I have a negative effect on mitochondrial health, I'll have a negative effect on DNA, both the split of the DNA as well as what genes are switched on and what are switched off, you know. So it's all very well that we can, you know, have the DNA that gets sent over to our next generation, but it's the epigenetic effect that determines what's going to happen. So that epigenetic effect of if I turn the gene on, if I just, you know, turn that disease process on, or if I turn on a negative trait, you know, a development of a phenotype in someone, that's related to mitochondrial health. So we need to make sure that all of our lifestyle practices are as optimal as they can be within reason, but making conscious choices and recognizing that, you know, the health of the egg and the health of the sperm, we can influence to a degree, sperm much more than eggs, but certainly eggs for the previous 6 months will, you know, influence the development of it. And so that mitochondria will be influenced for the previous 6 months by anything that it's exposed to. And for sperm, on average, it's still around 2.5 months. But, you know, like in men, the mitochondrial health gets heavily influenced after that 60-day mark, you know. So when that sperm has been manufactured and then it's in the testes and it's exposed to more environmental things, heat changes, temperature changes, et cetera, that mitochondrial health can have a significant disruption at that point. And so we know that, you know, anything that a man does at that point, let's say he goes and has exposure to BPA or to phthalates or to high heat temperatures or whatever, that mitochondria gets quite damaged. And so they end up needing a lot more repair. And then we obviously go further and further in and we start thinking about, well, what am I putting in my body that's not necessarily external? And then we start thinking about the food we eat, the supplements that we have, things like that. And we know that the biggest mitochondrial savior, shall we say, is ubiquinol, which is the active form of CoQ10. I've done lots of research and it heavily connected to the community around the development of it and the manufacture of it, because I know how much it works. And, you know, we know that ubiquinol status of an individual declines as we get older, we lose it. Yeah. It's something that we naturally manufacture. And we know that after the age roughly of 25, you know, we tend to decline in production. And ubiquinol is literally heavily concentrated where the mitochondria is concentrated, in the egg and in the sperm. So if that ubiquinol concentration declines, you know, we have to be looking at supplementation. And, you know, we've got data now that correlates usage of it, direct correlation with mitochondrial health. And for example, in sperm, morphological aspects of the structure of the sperm looks different just from ubiquinol supplementation, or the movement of the sperm improves because the mitochondria is more active, you know, things like that. It's really quite powerful. Other mitochondrial support strategies are things that correlate with methylation, so particularly all your B vitamins, because they reduce inflammation systemically. Yeah. So we know that things like folate and B12 are involved in the replication of cells and the uniformity of DNA and the stability of mitochondria. But definitely just the very notion of, if I don't have enough B12 and I don't have enough folate and they're not in the right ratio, then my methylation either goes too much or too little, and then I promote inflammation, which promotes oxidation, which then promotes mitochondrial loss. So it always links in.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all interlinked. I mean, we are, you know, human beings with such complex systems. So everything links to one other thing. There's no one thing. So even though we're talking about, I guess, a particular supplement at the moment, there are a lot of things at play. And I'm glad you spoke about those lifestyle things and things like that, because it is also, I think there is it, like you spoke about with our genetics, there is that presumption that genetics are set in stone, but the epigenetics, or the way those genetics are expressed, is the most important thing, really. Yeah. And that's something we can influence, which is really exciting. So yes, we can't change our DNA that our grandmas passed on to us, but we can change the way our DNA is expressed with all of these things and the ubiquinols. Yeah. I think hopefully most people know about ubiquinol and its importance, because particularly, as you said, we're having kids older for a ton of reasons, and ubiquinol decreases. So we want to be able to replenish that and all the lifestyle factors. Anything else before we jump into the big gun, the NAD plus?
Oh, look, every other vitamin. There's some pretty amazing, interesting research around vitamin D. Yeah, that's probably just another one to highlight. Just, you know, the thing that I always highlight is vitamin D is both a hormone and a vitamin.
Yeah,
you know, and its hormonal function, we've got a lot of understanding around how it regulates other hormones. And so if, as we age, you know, human growth hormone declines, our mitochondrial health declines, and vitamin D assists in the regulation of that, then that's just like one tiny snippet of what it does. But it's just sort of looking at it and remembering that every single nutrient that we're made of will influence that mitochondrial health directly in multiple ways, but they're probably the biggest heroes.
Yeah, and such a simple thing to really improve. And so these are
easy.
Yeah. And it's something that we can get checked. It's something we can improve quite simply. And we're talking about the methylation. Obviously, the B vitamins are really important, getting them through your diet and through appropriate supplementation too. And methylation is the kind of our detox in a shortened nutshell version, but helps our mitochondria, helps our energy. It is a very important process that is integral to our body, and we want to have that functioning effectively for our fertility. So looking at NAD plus, it's relatively new player on the market. There's a lot of evolving research. And I know you presented recently, which is why I approached you to come on here and talk about your amazing research into this. What is NAD plus?
So essentially what we're looking at is the energy generation within the body. And so we're looking at this substance called NAD, which is directly linked to something called the Krebs cycle, which is all about energy production and obviously then vitality of different cells. And there's some interesting research that's been coming out, in all the anti-aging movements, which are looking specifically at what are the substances in the body that are accelerating aging and what are the substances that are reducing aging. Mm. And so we're looking at people like David Sinclair and his research group, which is all attached to Harvard, and, you know, amazing humans. And they've been doing a couple of research projects with my research group at UNSW, looking at all the NAD precursors as well. And all the original studies were looking at mouse studies. And a couple of studies came out and they were looking at, well, if I manipulate this NAD pathway, I'm actually able to regress aging and to salvage cells and to improve the energy generation within those cells. And now they've been extrapolating them into human studies and looking at the research behind it. And, you know, the substances that are, you know, in biochemistry, it's all around what's the original substance and then how does it get converted in the body. And these NAD precursors and looking at, can I manufacture them as a supplement and which of them work better than others and what's the required dose and how can I influence the entire pathway that essentially reduces oxidation, reduces inflammation, improves metabolic programming, reduces stress resistance, improves mitochondrial regeneration, protects nerves, like does all of these phenomenal different pathways that are all around essentially DNA repair and anti-aging. So, you know, it's a very exciting time. We're in early stages of research around it. We've got enough body of evidence from clinical trials and things to go, yes, there's definitely something here. Mm-hmm. We've got enough good companies that are manufacturing substances to go, yes, these are things that we should be safe to be able to prescribe. And we still have areas that we need to understand. But, you know, the fact that they can completely turn aging around in mice definitively and in the fertility world, you know, they can improve the quality of sperm, the count of sperm, the movement of sperm, reduce DNA fragmentation. In women, they're reducing the aging process within the oocytes. That's pretty profound stuff, you know, and this is where we're in an exciting phase of medicine where we can actually start to influence that whole aging process, particularly in this pathway.
Which is so important in this day and age when we are having kids older, we want to be able to improve the health of the next generation as well, which is, something obviously we're both passionate about. And to be able to influence these pathways is a phenomenal thing that we can actually do. So when we're talking, first of all, how do we influence these pathways from without supplementation? Is there a way? I mean, lifestyle things, are we talking about all the basic stuff to improve our NAD plus?
Absolutely. Yeah. Look, I mean, the number one is sleep. So when you look at all of the research, it's about having enough sleep and good quality sleep and then having, you know, sunlight exposure in the morning, whatever. And we know that that whole NAD pathway and that anti-aging pathway, you know, like this is where they start doing all the studies looking at shift workers and things and they, you know, or even, you know, the interesting one where they did all those studies of the NASA twins, you know, the one that went to outer space and the one that stayed on Earth and whatever, and the aging processes and correlating it with the pathways and things. And it's just, it's looking at sleep deprivation and changes to sleep being the primary driver of the aging process and literally destroying various pathways. And in the fertility world, we know that fertility is significantly affected. We know that every single hormone pathway is suppressed or reduced by a lack of sleep. So we know that sleep is number one. Then we start thinking about things along the lines of insulin regulation because that's neuroprotective and that's cellularly protective and it helps keep our brain optimized. And we've got to remember in fertility, the brain is what drives all of our hormones. It's the precursor king hormones that then tell our gonads, our testes or our ovaries what to do. And so then the sperm and the eggs will respond accordingly. So it's about sleep, it's about insulin, and it's about exercise and about eating optimally and not eating too much and having fasting windows that are appropriate for your metabolic phenotype and things. But it's, you know, that whole anti-aging world is around really looking at it. And, you know, it's optimizing your choices day to day. And it's optimizing what you put into your mouth, what you put on your skin, what you expose yourself to, how happy you are. And, you know, it's an interesting time when we're combining all of those different research fields, you know, like we're combining the neuroplasticity world, we're combining the happiness research, all those longevity studies, the Okinawan groups, like we're looking at all of these various studies and going, so what is it that makes us be the best version of ourselves and have the best next generation? And then we refine it and we come into all of these areas and these lines of these NAD precursors and we go, well, there's actually a supplement that will help too. And that's pretty cool.
That is pretty exciting. But I also do love the fact that all this research into these pathways comes back to sleep, getting our insulin regulation. So, because I know it is hard, and I know you probably speak with patients as well. You say, okay, get good quality sleep, don't eat too much sugar, that they're all basic stuff. And they go, yeah, we've heard that before. Mm. But when we can actually show and prove that this thing, I think it's having the why behind it. It's more motivation to actually improve your sleep, help, you know, not grab that extra bit of chocolate, because we know those insulin pathways are so important. So getting those things right and then supplementing, that's what I say. Yes. We can't out-supplement our lifestyle.
Yeah.
But I'm sure everyone's ears are peaked thinking, okay, a pill
sounds now what? Good.
Yes. Okay, let's go into the supplements. And I know there is a lot of, we talked about the precursors you mentioned there's precursors available. Talk about the supplements available and what people will see on the market.
So do you mind if I go into a little bit of the biochemistry?
Absolutely. Just to sort of, I love that.
The theme.
Love speaking to you about that. So delve into that now.
Yeah. Okay. So what we're talking about here is essentially the fundamental building block is actually tryptophan. So tryptophan is an amino acid. So we know that when we consume any food, we get an amino acid out of it. If there's a protein content within it, and pretty much every food has some protein, but obviously things like animal products or pulses and things like that will have higher protein than, let's say, an apple. And so when you consume protein, it's a macronutrient, it's made up of a number of amino acids, and one of those amino acids, tryptophan, sets the stage for this whole pathway. And so this is where that part of you need to sleep comes in, because tryptophan helps us have the best quality sleep. And tryptophan, when you start to then break it down along one of its pathways, its next subsequent step is vitamin B3. And the first form of vitamin B3, and the thing to remember is vitamin B3 is in multiple forms, depending on how activated it is or what's actually happened to it. But vitamin B3, when we come down to one of its first stages, is called nicotinic acid. And nicotinic acid is the one when you have that form of vitamin B3, that's when you can get that flush feeling, that redness in your cheeks. But it's one of the quickest ways where you can actually influence that vitamin B3 pathway, but it's not necessarily the most pleasant one to take, because you can get symptoms from it, but it certainly then gets converted into a number of other substances in the body. And the next substance that it goes through is niacinamide, which is we call it colloquially its activated form. And niacinamide, you may have seen in a number of supplements, it's really useful for all sorts of things that B3 does. But niacinamide, lots of research around its use in, let's say, things like skin cancers or cardiovascular diseases, high cholesterol, methylation glitches, pro-inflammatory conditions, cancers, those sorts of things. Yeah. Then when we start to progress forward after niacinamide, we start moving into substances, one of them being called nicotinamide riboside. And nicotinamide riboside, you've probably may have seen in the supplement world. And that's when we're starting to get into, we're manufacturing something in a much more specific form. And nicotinamide riboside, we've been able to manufacture it for probably around, what are we looking at now? Overseas, maybe 2 years, 18 months, 2 years. Availability in Australia is really only in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
And remember, Australian standards extremely stringent because of the TGA. So we know safety is there and body of evidence is there, and it's really useful. And it's a really interesting substance, nicotinamide riboside. It has lots of studies around it. You know, those mouse studies that I talked about earlier, specific with egg quality, that's the one that they've been using.
Yeah.
True Niagen is the one that they've used in most of the trials. And, you know, there's that great study that my research group is doing at the moment with a low dose and a high dose version of it, and trying to work out what influences egg quality and which is the better dose and how does it work and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. Various products on the market, some combining with other anti-aging substances. Safety profile is pretty phenomenal. Risk profile is really low. No one tends to get any side effects. Fantastic. Really stable. Then we go into something called NMN. NMN is a fairly unstable molecule to manufacture. Research around it is thinner. Various companies around the world are manufacturing the substance. Bioavailability is meant to be better because it is one step along, but stability of the products when they're manufacturing them is still not quite there. I don't think we've landed yet. And a lot of the substances that are on the market, really important that people look at the excipient content within them, because there's a lot of interesting things in the products to try to keep it stable. So the intention is great. But whether or not I want to put that in my body, don't know that I do. So look at that. And I don't know, personally, from a clinical context, I don't know that I actually see that there's benefit from NMN over NR. I think that NR is still giving me the clinical responses that I want to be seeing. So I'm not jumping into NMN yet. And then there's NAD. NAD has been used for a really long time in an intravenous capacity. And in an intravenous capacity, it was used particularly for people that were alcoholics or drug addicts as a detoxification process. And it's a fairly aggressive intravenous preparation. The jury's not clear as to whether or not the intravenous preparation gives us an advantage from a mitochondrial health perspective or an anti-aging perspective with particularly eggs and sperm. Systemically is one thing, but, you know, specifically looking at eggs and sperm, you know, how they're protected in the body is different. Accessibility to them is different. Can we give them a quick intravenous preparation and will we get the therapeutic outcome? I don't know that we know yet.
Yeah.
So it's not that it's a definitive no. I just think we don't know yet. You know, you think about all of the safety mechanisms that the body puts in place to protect those gametes, the eggs and the sperm. I don't know that the intravenous preparations get in there in that I'm going to have an IV and today my eggs are better. It might be that we need NR for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months to actually make a significant impact. And this is where we're in the discovery phase, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, safety profile of NAD in a supplemental form is very thin. Stability of the products is very scarce. Availability is pretty scarce comparatively. You know, like NR is very available, very accessible, very usable. I don't think we can do too much wrong, provided the dose is appropriate.
Yeah.
But NAD, NMN, I'm not there yet as a clinician. Talk to me in 6 months, I might feel better about it.
Yeah.
But I don't think we have enough data. And I think that the thing to remember is because we're getting into these very refined pathways, we don't know what we don't know. So we don't know what, if I'm starting to get more refined with the substances I'm giving, what are the other bits of the pathway that we haven't discovered yet that we will discover? And what am I doing? And if I'm having something that is so powerful that can repair DNA, if I give more of something, am I actually going to repair it and go in the opposite extreme? You know, like with methylation, when we all went a bit crazy with methyl groups and stuff, and we started making methylation go even into overdrive.
Exactly.
I'm going to make an NAD pathway go into overdrive. So I, you know, when I speak to people, it's NR is the one to be thinking of as a supplement. Certainly you can look at it as niacinamide, but I don't think you get as definitive that riboside molecule that attaches to that niacin, that original niacin, changes it quite a bit. And being an O's, it means it goes into different pathways in different ways. So that's where I'm sitting clinically. But that was my very long answer.
No, love the very long answer.
Sorry.
I totally agree with you in that. And I think that's something to be aware of is people listening, when you see a supplement on the market, there is a lot more to the supplement than just what's written on the front of the label. We need to be thinking about excipients. We need to be thinking how refined it is, what else is in there. So it's really important too. And that's why seeing someone like Leah or myself and getting things properly prescribed for you than just Googling and finding something that sounds amazing, because it may have the research behind it, but what forms it in, what dose is it in, what are the excipients, what brand are you using are all really important considerations, particularly when it comes to fertility. So I think jumping on and Googling NAD now and grabbing yourself something is probably not the best way to go with this, but exciting that it is having such an influence on fertility. And I think the nicotinamide riboside, that's the one I'm using as well. And I think also we need to, as you said, be careful. We're becoming, in my opinion, almost more drug-like. If we get too refined, like where are we narrowing? We want to be looking at this, you know, as our training was, in a holistic perspective and just supporting these natural pathways, not going too far down the line and without knowing what other consequences are going to come of it. So when we're looking at, you know, the nicotinamide riboside, and it does have some great research, looking at, I guess, female fertility and male fertility, what's the impact? First, we'll start with female fertility, probably lots of women listening. Yeah. What are we looking at there? If what could we expect from our supplement?
The goal, what we're hoping it's doing.
Yeah, the goal and the hope and what we're aiming for. Yeah.
What we're aiming for is we're looking at improving the quality of the eggs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing to remember with female fertility, as I said at the beginning, is the idea of, you know, we're born with all of our eggs. They go through maturation processes. We lose a lot of them at various stages of our life. But every time we have a cycle, we are going to lose some of that cohort. And the idea is that, you know, we can do all the testing in the world, AMH and FSH and antral follicle count and whatever. that's just looking at numbers based on that particular month. It's not looking at the quality of those eggs. And you may genetically just be someone that produces a lower volume of oocytes versus someone else that has a higher volume, but yours are actually better quality.
Yeah.
And the quality is what determines, can I successfully create a baby, and is that baby a live birth? Yeah.
Yeah.
So NR, and, you know, as a precursor, what we're looking at is exceptional mouse studies, really good human studies, just not enough data yet. We've got a few big cohort studies coming out, but it's all around the quality of the eggs, the ability of the egg to fertilize, you know, the potential of the oocyte, and the way we diagnose its quality is, does it fertilize and does it create a baby?
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. You know, it's not, is in an IVF context, does it look good when they're analyzing it through an embryologist lens? Because it's a different construct. So it's the quality of the egg and hopefully significant improvement in fertility outcome.
And that's what we want. It's all about quality over quantity. I've had some women produce two follicles. They're poor responders. They're older, you know, and I've had babies out of those. It's not about producing 20 eggs. You know, that might sound exciting if you're going through IVF, but we really want, it's, you know, no good producing those if they're all not going to actually successfully last and go on to create a pregnancy. So when we're looking at sperm health, obviously that's, as you mentioned, I get excited about sperm health because we can have great deal of influence, really. So what are we looking at? Why would we supplement with NR in regards to semen health?
So with men, you know, the structure of the sperm is really important for them to get to the destination, the ability for them to swim and all that sort of stuff. But the most important thing that NR and that whole NAD pathway has shown to improve is that it's around reactive oxygen species. So it's the idea of oxidation in the environment, which is affecting or changing the structure of the sperm and changing the DNA within the sperm. And NR is about reducing that DNA fragmentation rate and reducing the abnormality, particularly in structure. But if they don't look right, then they don't swim well. And, you know, like it flows onto all of the variables of assessment. But it's particularly around oxidation. And a sperm's quite fascinating for many reasons. But one of them is about this balance of reactive oxygen species. So they need a little bit of it to achieve something, but not too much of it, because then they kind of destroy themselves. So it's around just the balance of that oxidative process, and whether or not, you know, the balance of the oxidative process is there determines the quality of the semen that they're swimming in, and whether or not they're in competition to each other, because they actually all kind of, they're kind of like a school of fish, you know, like they swim as a group all together, or they fight each other and then they just swim in circles and don't go anywhere. So it's the interrelationship of the sperm and the individual relationship of each sperm and how they find the egg, communicate to it, and fuse and fertilize.
Yeah, and that's
so pretty important.
It is very, very important. It is so important when we're talking about getting the semen to, as I said, we need them to look good. We need to swim in the right direction. We need to not compete each other. We need to, some of them, the motility might be good if they're swimming in circles.
Yeah, pretty much. Forward progression.
Exactly.
Forward progression is the goal.
That forward progression towards the egg to be able to fertilize and go on to create a healthy pregnancy. So thank you so much for going through all that today. I find it fascinating and always love chatting with you and could chat for hours, but we don't have that time today. But is there anything you would like to leave us with today? So anyone who's listened, who is, you know, really excited by what is possible for them in improving egg and sperm quality. And I hope we've got that across today. If you know, hopefully lots else too, but that you can improve your chances of conceiving, you can improve your egg quality, you can improve your sperm health, even if you have been told otherwise. So if there's anything you would like to leave people with today who are listening today.
I mean, I think you summed it up beautifully, but it's the idea of it's within your choice. So the decisions that you make determine the health of your children. So whether or not you consider a supplement or whether or not you just get better sleep, you're definitely going to be improving the health of the next generation. And lo and behold, you'll improve your own health while you're at it. So it's only a win.
And exciting for that too, is it? Just to come back to the sleep and those simple, simple things.
Simple things.
I think it gives us a biological reason to get more focus on them, because we don't feel the effects. And I know, you know, I was a culprit a number of years as well, trying to conceive and working crazy hours and traveling all over Australia, and you know, I had to stop and change things before I was able to get pregnant. And now we see that a biological level why that is effective.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Pleasure. I will pop all the details for Leah in the show notes if you'd like to reach out to her. And I look forward to joining you for the next episode where we have more exciting guests talking all about how you can improve your fertility. Thanks for joining us, Leah.
Thank you so much.
Bye for now. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Conceive Baby podcast. To help you move forward on your journey to pregnancy, I've created your free fertility checklist for you. This checklist provides simple swaps you can make that can have a significant impact on your chances of conceiving and carrying your healthy baby. So be sure to head to conceivebaby.com.au/checklist to download your free fertility checklist today.